But now we continue the New Year celebrations with the second instalment of an annual favourite.
We present the News Quiz of the Year, Part 2, with your host, Simon Hoggart. Hello and welcome to Part 2 of our look at the news of the past 12 months. The second half of the year was dominated by terrorism and warfare, and indeed one edition of the show was cancelled in the wake of September the 11th. The first show after the disaster threatened to be deeply sombre. But when the panel got on stage, a kind of manic need to laugh took them over, and we had one of the funniest shows we've ever recorded. Sandy, who is ringing the changes at Buckingham Palace?
This will be Her Majesty marching forward into the 21st century. Her son, Prince Andrew, has given her a mobile phone. And it slightly worried me, the reports on this, it said Andrew, known to be the most technologically minded of the royal family. Well, yes, used to fly a jet. I hope he would be. And I quite like this, because she speaks a bit like a text message, doesn't she? She's got those very clipped vowels all the time. There's a kind of, I am ringing you on my mobile phone.
I'm on the throne.
And I was thinking about this, you know, that slogan, one to one, because strictly speaking, in relation to her, she'd be speaking to herself.
It's a perfect answer to people who say, why do we need a royal family? In a week of News Quiz Light, they've given us a lot of harmless fun. Where would we have been without them?
She was reluctant to get a mobile phone, and in the end, she just got it so she could phone her mum if she was stuck in town and couldn't get a taxi.
She won't be needing family and friends, I suppose, the way things are going. Yes, I know he is, Charles. Well, you know he is a special kind of stupid. We're so hoping to see you all at Christmas.
For phone users, the Queen can be heard shouting into her mobile, I'm sorry, you're cracking up. But what else do you say to the Duke of Edinburgh?
A new slimming consultant is taking over at Wareham with ambitious plans to double the size of the group.
Andy, why can English parents stay on the beaten track?
Is this the fact that unlike the good people of Scotland, English parents are allowed to be brutal and beat their children if they misbehave?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much against violence towards your children. Partly because all my children, who are 13, 11 and 6, are taller than me now. But it seems to me that there's a bit of a problem constitutionally, because if I were a Scot who believes in hitting his kids, what is to stop me getting cross with the kids, bunging them in the car, driving down to Gretna Green and then giving them a good thumping? I don't see... Surely...
Some people have actually looked in the Bible, haven't they, in the Old Testament, and said that they found a proof there that it says, you know, you can beat your child with a rod and he won't die. So they're saying that it's all right. In the Old Testament, in those days, it was done.
Yeah, but the Old Testament says you can't lie down with beasts, and I think we've moved on from that now.
Despite the decision, instances of parents hitting their children have greatly decreased over the past few years, mainly because most children these days are born 6 foot tall, carrying Stanley knives.
Dr. Alex Comfort, author of The Joy of Sex, has died after a series of strokes.
Fred, listen to this. William, it was really nothing. Fred, who's uncovered his first ardent admirer?
Well, can I just apologise to the listeners because there will be no further rounds? Because there's plenty on this, isn't there? William. William has arrived in St Andrews on an exchange. They've got him and you've got me. I do apologise. But before he got to St Andrews, they took Prince William to Sight Hill in Glasgow, which is a fairly run-down area. Most of the buildings are boarded up, and that's where they've got a lot of asylum seekers who are waiting to get redistributed around Scotland. And they played a nasty trick on William. They took him there and they told him that that was his hall of residence. Then eventually when he got to St Andrews, named after his uncle Andrew, the golfer, he was filmed by another dodgy uncle. It's a shocking state when you can't take a home video. All kinds of trouble breaking out. And, the last thing Edward is going to be making is a TV programme. The only thing to make are losses.
It's the A to Z of royalty. And I thought, by the time he gets to ex-King Zog, it's bound to be ex-Prince Edward, because they're making less than £2 a year, aren't they? I mean, they're always in debt, which this was designed to mitigate. Now he's had to apologise to Charles. It is the most remote university in the world. I mean, next to Mars Polytechnic. Andrews is as far as you can get from civilisation. These poor kids go up there. Very, very high percentage of public school educated kids go to St Andrews. They know nothing at all when they get there. And they don't know where they are when they've got there. All there is the sea and this tremendous mist, this fog called the Haar. And it's really like the French lieutenant's woman. They wear these huge woolly gowns. Other universities have thin gowns. You need woolly gowns at St Andrews, don't you, Frank? So bloody freezing. And they walk up and down St Andrews, looking out to sea through the fog, hoping to see a ship that'll take them back to civilization.
He's clever, though, because that course, I believe, is quite demanding.
It's history of art.
Yeah, no. Excuse me, you do 2 years of history and then 1 year of drawing and then a year of colouring in. I think there's quite...
Lavatories at the City of Leeds School, West Yorkshire, are to be transformed into an open-plan area with glass-panelled walls. The design is aimed at stopping the lavatories from becoming a no-go area.
Jeremy, why is a safe existence far from a cosy one?
Oh, yeah. Accidents in the home. There are all these things. They've got a report of all the things that cause accidents, but they didn't tell us how. And it just makes you wonder, because whenever you... Like tea cosies, loafers, all these things that cause accidents. Because if you ever spend, you know, an evening with three or four nurses, I mean, in your dreams, but I mean, in a social situation, they will start telling you these apocryphal stories about people who came into casualty. And it's like that game where you say... My auntie went shopping and she bought a hat. The next person says, my auntie went shopping and she bought a hat and a coat. And the nurses will say, someone was brought into casualty and we removed from him a billiard cue. The next one says, someone was brought into casualty and we removed from him a billiard cue and a light bulb. Someone was brought into casualty and we removed a billiard cue, a light bulb and a bust of Napoleon. On it goes. And, sometimes it's Beethoven, but pretty much the same sort of head size and that. But they don't tell you how these loofah accidents... You know, I fell onto my loofah as I was getting out of the bar. Sebastian. I don't know.
But they did, actually. They said, because there were 6,000 trouser-related accidents last year. And those ones, they said, one of them was a woman who burnt herself while she was ironing her trousers because she hadn't taken them off beforehand.
Explain the tea cosy one.
I think it's the same as the trousers. Basically, if you can't shove it up yourself, you'll trip over it.
A daguerreotype image of Charles Dickens, an early form of photograph on glass, was expected to sell for between £20,000 and £25,000 when it went under the hammer at Christie's in London.
In our relentless search for the trivial, the insignificant and the ludicrous, naturally we zero in on politics. So we were thrilled when, a month after the World Trade Centre, Tony Blair helped restore our good humour with a magnificently over-the-top speech at the Labour Party conference.
As I was listening to it, and as I heard him talking about how we in the rich nations could feed Africa if we only showed the will and could conquer the problems of climate change, and how we, if we reached out to the dispossessed of the world, we could bring peace to the world, I thought, I've heard this speech, I recognise this speech, and then I realise it's the speech I make when I'm pissed. It is. You know, after I'm getting a bit sentimental after a few pints. It was very identical. The only thing that was missing was he wasn't jabbing people in the chest and saying, and I'll tell you something else. But I actually thought it was rather wonderful. It was such a sweeping, idealistic speech. And I thought, I'd love it all to come true. I'm sure we would, but it struck me that the only thing that stands between Tony Blair and his sort of very idealistic vision is us, isn't it? Because we'd all like to conquer climate change, but we don't want to pay any more for our petrol, let's be honest. And we would all love to end world poverty, but we don't want to pay more tax. And we'd all love to stop selling helicopters to horrible regimes, as long as it doesn't cost 300 jobs in Swindon.
You know, there's all very well going on about curing the Balkans and curing Ireland and curing Rwanda, but you know nothing about things like the Hanger Lane gyratory system. I thought a smidgen of practicality would not have gone amiss. But it was a leader's speech. I mean, you read that, you know, you'd follow him anywhere if only out of curiosity.
I would like to point out that Emma Kirkby, who is performing at St. Saviour's Church on Sunday, July the 15th, is in fact a celebrated singer, and not, as our previous report stated, a celebrated swinger.
Valerie, your piece of music.
I'm going to be round my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. Vegetables cart off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
That's the longest music we have ever had.
I think that was a song about vegetables.
I just checked. Did everyone hear, or did I just dream it?
Valerie, why is there no danger of our kids turning into vegetables?
Ah, yes. That's because all the Harry Potter fans are so busy reading Harry Potter that they're not eating their greens.
Indeed.
And it's going to do something terrible to them when they grow up, but I'm not quite sure what it is.
We're going to die.
Simon, I don't think there's any chance of you being a Blue Peter presenter. Now then, children, the world is an evil and vile, where you will all inevitably fall into a decline, into senility and ultimately death. And now, what's Petra been up to?
For sale, Dalmatian, 10 months old. Divorce forces sale. Lovely bitch.
Why was it a thumping good week for peace in Northern Ireland?
David Trimble was re-elected as the first secretary, and this led to a great furore outside the Parliament. Everybody pushing and shoving, and David Trimble was trying to make a speech, and it was dreadful. It just seemed to denigrate, really, the whole Northern Irish Parliament, didn't it?
It did. Well, if that's possible, yes.
It was quite a girly fight, though, wasn't it? There was a lot of men.
Didn't look a girly fight when I saw it. Looked like for real.
Oh, mate, have you got Sky? Did you see a better version? It looked to me like a pretty sort of middle-aged male fight where lots of people stick their beer guts into each other. And sort of say, come on then.
I don't think
fisticuffs. Yes, it was pay-per-view on Sky, actually. It was worth the extra, definitely, because Trimble came on in little leopard skin shorts. Danced down the aisle to Eye of a Tiger.
But they all blamed each other, didn't they? They all said, Paisley said it was the other lot, and the other lot said it was Paisley's lot.
What Paisley said, which was priceless, was he said, I saw it all. He said, I was just standing here quietly.
To let, beautifully located first floor flat situated between the village shops and China.
Linda, why has Ian Duncan Smith refused to show a sign of support?
Ah, now, this is Francis's evil twin, Ian Duncan Smith.
Oh, no, go on,
how could two brothers be so different? I don't know.
I'm going to stick up for Francis. He's got much more hair.
Well, that's only because I've been working on it for the last 2 weeks. I've been trying to grow it out. Simply because it got to the stage where I was actually being mistaken for him, even by Tory MPs, and I thought the only solution is either to dye it or to grow it.
You're kidding. What, a Tory MP didn't know what Ian Duncan Smith looked like?
No, I was genuinely accosted at Westminster by a Tory MP. He said, Ian, could I have a...
Did you offer him a job in the shadow cabinet? He's going around now saying, I've got transport. Who was it? Name names.
Well, I didn't know who he was. It's... Well, do you know... How many Tory MPs could you recognise in the identity parade? You can't even recognise the deputy leader of the party these days.
Oh, dear. So, no, well, what it is that man that we're talking about, he won't sign this form about defamation of Islam. It's a sort of thing that's come round for them to sign, a charter.
It's a pledge, isn't it, calling for tolerance. And I think it's the wrong approach to promote tolerance. It seems to me that the way to promote tolerance is to make it compulsory. And if anyone's being intolerant, you just don't tolerate it. And you...
Funny thing, Islamic awareness. I mean, most people are aware that there's such a thing as Islam, aren't they? I don't know where you'd have to be living.
Well, they thought Tony Blair's aware of Islam. He reads the Quran all the time. Osama bin Laden is highly aware of Islam. He reads the Quran all the time. You know, where's it got them?
That's a funny thing with Osama bin Laden. He's got all those wives. And yet, you know, he lives in a cave. He's got a big beard. That doesn't normally pull the birds, does it? He's probably got a really good sense of humour.
How do I catch my bus? You can catch your bus at any local bus stops or bus stations. It is best to arrive at the stop before the bus is due.
Kirsty, who has Tony Bin targeting directly this week?
Oh, yes, well, Tony Blair's told us that actually he's now decided that if we catch bin Laden, he's going to be killed. Up until now, they were just going to scare him a lot. But now he's really fed up after 3 weeks of dropping very, very expensive weaponry, and he still hasn't come out of his cave, so that's it, they're going to shoot him. Which I thought they were going to do in the first place, but apparently not.
No.
And now we're told we might not even find him at all.
Well, we might not. He might be a shimmerer, if that's how you pronounce it.
Well, I think I can clear this up, because I've not been on the show a couple of weeks, and that is because I've been on covert operations within Afghanistan. Not happy with my disguise. I didn't think it was that convincing. I was an Avon lady in Kabul. didn't ship much gear, to be honest. A couple of tubes of beard styling gel, and that was it. House is full of lip gloss, but... Now, it is baffling, this policy. They're now saying, oh, we're going to kill him. But I thought, the way things are going, their policy was to kill everyone else, and the one left standing would be bin Laden.
Well, if only he joins the coalition, he'll be fine.
I bet his mums and dad must be really upset.
Well, he's a typical middle child, isn't he? 27th out of 56.
Of course, we have our own domestic terrorism here in Britain. Naturally, the panel takes it very seriously.
Francis, which war really will be over before Christmas?
I think it's the IRA. They've decided to join the war against terrorism. And Gerry Adams has entered into the spirit of the thing and says that he's decided to decommission his beard. And long overdue, in my view. And certainly now. I mean, he really can't compete with old bin Laden, can he? On the face of his front. And it's going to be put beyond further use, I think is the technical term. General John de Chastelain has been taken to a secret location. It's actually a barber's shop in County Cork, and has witnessed this great event. And it's peace in our time. I mean, we're bombing Afghanistan to smithereens and that sort of thing, but apart from that, it's all happy-clappy, and children are dancing in the streets of Belfast, and, except for the ones who are trying to get to school through a mob of howling loyalists. But apart from that, everything's going awfully well.
Slightly unsettled on the day I turned the news on, and it said the British Army are destroying all their watchtowers. And I thought, there'll be trouble from the provisional Jehovah's Witnesses.
The article in our education supplement, pages 10 and 11 yesterday, does make sense, but only if the columns are read in the following order. 1, 4, 2, 3, 6, 5, 7. Apologies.
Valerie, why is being a bit woolly no bar to intelligence?
Oh, yes, this is a lovely story. This is all about sheep. Somebody decided that they'd test whether sheep had intelligence. I'd love to know why they ever thought to do this in the first place. But apparently sheep recognise each other. They have friends in the flock.
But it also makes them cleverer than Tory MPs who don't recognise anyone.
They have a lot more hair than some Tory MPs. And they've been doing these tests. They've been putting up pictures of sheep. I noticed the sheep did look quite different. One was a rather fat sheep and one was a fairly thin sheep. And if the sheep that's let into the pen recognises the right sheep and presses the button with its nose, it gets the food. Presumably they change the pictures around all the time so the sheep gets a bit confused, but apparently they're very intelligent.
You can't pull the wool over their eyes.
It wasn't one of the conclusions of the research also that sheep don't like change.
And they always, like, they're not very adventurous eaters. No, just the grass.
Yeah.
No, I'll stick with the grass. No, nothing too spicy. Yeah. I'll just have something from the grass menu, please.
Reward. Stolen, apparently by common thieves, between the hours of 12 a.m. and 8 a.m. on Saturday morning from my land alongside the A386, a quantity of blue signs with the words, Vote Conservative.
Linda, who thinks qualifying for a free tour bus pass is a gas, gas, gas?
Bill Wyman.
Yes.
Because he's a pensioner now, isn't he? I thought he had been for years, actually. I didn't realise. Because he looks very old. He's sort of like a scrotum in sunglasses. He's they all do, don't they? The ones that look like really, really, really old tortoises who've never bothered much with sunscreen. They're So there's that. He's a pensioner. Well, they're all pensioners now. I think, there was their last tour, the Rolling Stones Voodoo Lounge. I think the next one will be Sunshine Lounge. I think Led Zeppelin will probably release Stairlift to Heaven. And Earth, Wind and Fire will name themselves. A bit cloudy, but might clear up later. Still, mustn't rumble.
Keith Richards recently turned 57, though we've no idea what that is in human years. Paris weekend, 3-day Valentine break. Why not take this superb opportunity to spoil someone special? Single supplement, £28.
And we end with a selection from the scores of cuttings team members have brought along to the show, starting with Linda Smith.
Paolo Esperanza, bass trombonist with the Sinfonica Maya de Uruguay, decided to make his own contribution to the cannon shots fired as part of the orchestra's performance of Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture. He placed a large ignited firecracker, equivalent to a quarter stick of dynamite, into an aluminium straight mute, and then inserted the mute into the bell of his double valve bass trombone. Later, from his hospital bed, he explained, I thought the bell of my trombone would shield me from the explosion and would focus the blast outwards. In his haste to get his horn up before the firecracker went off, he failed to elevate the bell high enough to give the mute sufficient arc to clear the orchestra. As a result, the mute streaked through the woodwind and viola sections, narrowly missing players before slamming into the stomach of the conductor and knocking him off the platform into the audience. The folding chairs of the front row then collapsed, setting up a domino effect, toppling row after row of chairs. Back on stage, the blast of the firecracker sent a surge of superheated gas through the trombone to propel the slide like a spear into the head of an unsuspecting third clarinetist, knocking him unconscious and fracturing his skull.
Well, this was sent in by Margaret Patching of East Sussex, and it comes from the World Pheasant Association, the UK bulletin. And apparently the inscription on the metal bands used by the US Department of the Interior to tag migratory birds has been changed. The bands used to bear the address of the Washington Biological Survey, abbreviated as WASH, Boyle, serve. Until the agency received the following letter from an Arkansas camper. Dear sirs, while camping last week, I shot one of your birds. I think it was a crow. I followed the cooking instructions on the leg tag. And I want to tell you, it was horrible. The bands are now marked Fish and Wildlife Service.
This cutting was sent to me, Simon, by Peter Donaldson of Portland Place. It says, a Radio 5 Live reporter sent to cover the retrial of the Leeds United footballers in Hull was parking near the court when he was approached by the car park attendant. I suppose you're a journalist, said the attendant. How did you guess? Asked the reporter, impressed by the man's observational skills. To which the attendant replied, we don't wear sunglasses in Hull.
An employee for Ansett Australia Airlines, a Mr. Gay, got on a plane recently using the company's free flight offer for staff. However, when Mr. Gay tried to take his seat, he found it occupied by a fare-paying passenger. Not to make a fuss, he simply chose another seat. Meanwhile, another Ansett flight at the airport experienced mechanical problems. The passengers of this flight were rerouted. A few were put on Mr. Gay's flight, and anyone holding a free ticket was being bumped. Mr. Gay was not sitting in his assigned seat. So when the ticket agent approached the seat where Mr. Gay was supposed to be sitting, she asked a startled customer, are you gay? The man, the wrong man, shyly nodded that he was. At which point she demanded, then you have to get off the plane. Mr. Gay, overhearing what the agent had said, tried to clear up the situation. You've got the wrong man. I'm gay. This caused an angry third passenger to yell, I'm gay too. They can't kick us all off.
That's all from us in our first show of 2002. We'll be back in February, so please do keep those clippings coming in. We need them all. In the meantime, we leave you with best wishes for a happy new year and this extract from The Times, read by Corrie Caulfield.
One in five British children has head lice. Why can't we kill them?
Taking part in the News Quiz of the Year, Part 2, were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith and Jeremy Hardy, with Fred McCauley, Sandy Toksvig, Valerie Singleton, Kirsty Young and Rebecca Front. The host was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by Corrie Caulfield, Charlotte Green, Brian Perkins and me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Debbie Barham, Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson, Simon Littlefield, Paul McKenzie and George Poles, and the producer, Armitage and Steve Doherty.